Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit DXEngineering.com/HamNation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 299, May 10th, 2017, interview with the Digital Net Control.
Hello, everybody. It's K9EID, and I'm, Marty says, I'm up the hill from St. Louis in Fairview Heights, Illinois, where we build all these wonderful products that Sarah and her staff runs, and so I'm here. Got a good internet connection tonight, but they're all here, and we're hoping Amanda will be here. She's got a little storm problem going, but she's got some really nice interviews with three of the great net controllers of many. You've been seeing and hearing a few of them, but they'll be here later. Jeff and Andrew and David. So stick around at the bottom of the hour. And until then, let's go see who all's here. I think Gordo's got something going on. How you doing in Southern Cal, Gordon?
I am doing fine, Bob. Getting lots of positive comments on the CW. And we'll do code practice today with the letter A in front of each of our short shots. Back to you, Bob.
That's great. Yeah, it's wonderful. That's what we try to do, is to bring all kinds of neat things here. And boy, talk about a neat thing. A couple of weeks ago, if you missed it, you better back up and see it. George did an amazing thing to tell us how filters work, rectifiers and filters, and why we need these big, long things. George, that was great. How are you doing in Mississippi?
Hi, Bob. Thanks. Well, yeah, we're going to just touch on something I left off on the filters last time around, but just a little something I wanted to just kind of add to it. Well, I've been on the roof a lot of the day today, on a satellite dish. You know, most of the radio networks use a single satellite, and that satellite is at the end of life, so they're all having to swap over to another one. And fortunately, my old dish was good enough to see the new one, and we got her tuned in today. So, aiming antennas, I guess.
Aiming antennas. Okay. We have to do that. When things are 22,000 miles up in the sky, you got to keep them all in line. And how are you doing, Don? Everything okay? Weather good down in the lower part of the United States?
Yes, very good. I think you have a picture of something I was doing around lunchtime. We had a visitor today. There he is. It's Kiwi Simon. I can't remember his call sign. ZL something or other from New Zealand. And there we are having a wonderful shrimp lunch at a little restaurant within walking distance of my work downtown New Orleans. So nice to see Simon. And he brought some goodies and stuff. And we had a great time. I'm trying something on tonight, Bob. I've got the lanyard out, and I'm just trying these on to make sure that they feel okay. I have two, because I have this one, and then I have a second one because that's my son Tyler's. And you can't see for the glare, but there's no call sign up here yet, but we're working on it. So Tyler's coming to Dayton, and I'm trying these on for him. I'm warming them up. I'm warming up the ticket for the boy. Try to get a little Will Banks luck into it, Bob. That's what we're doing over here.
That's great. Well, I got a couple of quick pictures. Let's do these just a couple of seconds at a time. I had a wonderful Saturday. I went down to Pea Ridge, Arkansas. There's my good friend Al And Ron, and here's that. Here you go, Val, good friend of Al's. That's San K5YY, and we just had a great time there. It was a little tailgater, and I took some things, and the hit of the whole afternoon was that wonderful little pine board. There were several of them that are building it. Oh, I get into that in a while. And we had a lot of fun down in Pea Ridge, Arkansas. This is not very far from Bentonville. There was a not a really good picture that I shot because it was windy and dark. You notice my hair was all messed up. But we had so much fun there. And those are the kind of ham fests that I love. There are maybe 100 people there, the people I talk to on the air every Sunday afternoon on 3820. So had a good time meeting with them. Well, enough of that. Let's go learn some CW and other things that happen in Southern California. Go get it, George. And I mean, Gordon, you take care and teach
us. Well, that's okay. I go by many different names. And good evening to everybody on Ham Nation. We look forward to seeing many of you live from the Hamvention Arenas times six. Six different halls that will be wandering. And I hope you look me up in the W5YI hall, building number two. Well, let's jump into something that we've received a lot of correspondence of, and that is the loop. And we'll proceed it with a letter A. All right. We're going to talk about loop antennas. And we first encourage you to think about building your own loop. And you can go to www.alexloop.com. They've got all sorts of plans. Alex PY1AHD, Alex Grimberg, he's a gold connection inside his loops. This is not an Alex loop there, but it shows that he is willing to tell everybody how to make their own loop antenna. We've tried the Alex loop, and wow, it works great. Homebrew loops, they are a great way, even automatic ones that sense SWR. And if you are interested in building your own loop, take a look at VK5 Kilo Lima Tango. Google VK5 KLT, got about a 40-pager all about loop antennas. And the key to loop antennas, the letter A, is surface area. And here's another loop antenna. And the loop antennas, as long as they're about one loop length above the surface of the earth, they don't care about ground. Now, if you do have an exquisite, like a seawater ground like we have out here, all the better to make those loops really shine. Carl with Chameleon will be showing next. And Carl says the big thing is surface area. And take a look at this. Surface area galore skin effect is how the HF loop antenna works. The RF travels on about 20 microns only. And this one with wide surface area will cut down on what you don't want, and that is eddy currents. So Carl says, I've got a combination of different loop ideas, and we did some demonstration with it. You can look up his technical on loops at www.chameleonantenna.com, chameleonantenna.com. And his are really well made. Now, across the street, my buddy Jim Ford, N6JF, Jim did his own, and we know not to do a square loop, but an octagonal loop. We tried it versus the commercial one, and it was absolutely an outstanding performer. Both of these loops, about the same size, worked well. Well, we wanted to test them on the air and see if there was a huge difference between a loop and, let's say, a dipole antenna. Let me tell you, the dipole won every time. But when we compare the loop to a mobile antenna, well, that's a whole... That was the letter N. That's a whole nother subject. So we take a look at loops, and we see that each individual loop has its own feed point characteristic. But they all have that smaller inner loop that acts much like a transformer. Now, Jim homebrewed his loop, and he doubled the amount of capacitance, which he was able to do. Excuse me, he halved the amount of capacitance with double the power capabilities to minimize any arc over. So he did a great job of homebrewing this, and he's got also in the back a vacuum loop as well. And he can tune from about 6 megahertz on up to 30. But how do loops compare to, let's say, a mobile antenna like we see on the dune buggy? That's the letter A. And or how about some of the Charlie Hi-Q loops? Does the loop antenna compare to Charlie's Hi-Q antenna, the vertical antenna that you see there? So we wanted to find out. So we got all of our loops together, and we took them for a little test. And you saw this one before. This was our backyard test, and there was not much difference between the aluminum loop on the right and the coaxial cable, that's actually a shorted coax acting as the loop radiator on the left. So we did a lot of testing, and we were worried about the chameleon aluminum connection points. And Jim had a wonderful milli-ohm, micro-ohm meter. And we found out that as long as we tightened everything up real well, we were getting good performance with almost identical. He was a little lower on the milliohm scale than we were with the aluminum loop. And while aluminum has a little bit more ohmic resistance than copper, we found that the aluminum did very well, as long as you kept these aluminum connections absolutely tight. And there's that center inner loop. And that inner loop, we found out, can either be touching the aluminum loop or not touching. We tried different configurations, but one thing we found out for sure, here it is right on top of the coaxial cable loop, is that if it's not perfectly aligned and if that coax cable is not perfectly wound around in a round circle, we're going to lose performance. And you could actually see the SWR jumping around as we were working with it. So we tried to isolate that inner loop, which is 5 times smaller than the bigger loop, and made no difference. But performance was good as long as we had everything nice and tight. The key, keep that feeder loop, the smaller of the loops, that acts as a transformer to the larger loop of the magnetic energy. Make sure that it's perfectly aligned, and that's the letter A. And there's Jim with his milliohm meter. Testing the chameleon antenna versus his homebrew. He won because he did some spectacular soldering and welding to get everything down to the minimum resistance. So we did a lot of testing first of just the ohmic resistance. And here we have the coax cable that is feeding the loop. And we have RF choke beads. It's a ferrite mix 31. With a mu of 800, and it keeps any RF from coming out of the loop and going backwards into the radio. Now, on the chameleon loop, they had this little doodad off to the left. They won't tell me what it is. It's patented, but it allows up to about 60 or 70 watts of power to be run into it. I think it's an additional amount of capacitance that is a fixed capacitor, and the two-position switch allows us to go from 5 to 7 megahertz. As well as in the other position, 7 to 30 megahertz. So here was our test with Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Service. We're working NVIS to stations all over. For the photo, we had the loop fairly close to the vehicle. But as we started to do our testing, that's Dennis, KI6WJZ, that is moving the loop further away. And what we found was, even with a larger Hi-Q Charlie vertical antenna, the loop did just about the same. So don't expect that your loop antenna is going to be necessarily 2 or 3 S units stronger than what a nice professional center-loaded mobile whip is. But the neat thing about the loop is you could turn it to null out noise and peak it to pick up the signals. On 40 meters coming in NVIS, we rotated the loop with little difference on received signal strength, but a big difference in cutting down the noise from our police department's EOC. Now, this is another one of the Chameleon products. Notice the tuning is right there for his thumb to be able, that's the letter A, to be able to tune it. But look at this. Now they're coming out with a remote tuning. So for those of you in the chat room or those tuning us in, you can do a loop antenna in the attic and have it remote controlled. And Carl did a great job. So if you want to put it up in the attic, it'll turn both the loop as well as it will tune just the loop. So that's a great way to go if you're not permitted an antenna on the outside. But again, comparing the loop to a half-wave dipole, oh, the dipole will win every day. But the loop had some amazing properties and great capabilities when run very similar to a mobile antenna. That's the attic remote control setup. So we encourage all of you to explore the Alex loop. There's another one called the Alpha loop, which we've worked with. And, of course, a Chameleon loop. And there are many other commercial ones. But I encourage you to build the loop yourself based on the instructions that you can glean off the Internet. But there's one thing for sure. The bigger the capture area, more aluminum or the more copper you have out there, the better your signal response is going to be. So that was my tour of loop antennas. And we'll next see all of you at the Dayton Hamvention, no longer in Dayton, but just outside of it in Xenia. And we just hope everybody has a great week while the whole gang is there to come back to you next Wednesday in Ohio. So see you all at Hamvention. So Don, over to you. And I don't have my pass yet. So can you get me into maybe the Hamvention, Don?
All you got to do is just show your well suntanned face and you can get in any place, Gordon. You know that.
Thank you.
You know that for sure. You're welcome. Hey, had a good time last night on WTWW. It was the second Tuesday of the month, and that's always the night that apparently they have nothing better to do than to get me on there. And my friend Kevin, W4KEV up in Knoxville, we talked about having getting fun back on the radio, and specifically repeaters and local communications and things. So you need to check out the QSO radio show on WTWW shortwave, 5085 kilohertz. And you're hearing us on that, as a matter of fact, right now. We're also on 12.105 tonight. So Ted and the gang, thanks so much for simulcasting the Ham Nation audio. They're on the Big Blowtorch, WTWW shortwave out of Lebanon, Tennessee, USA. Let's get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2062, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, May 10th, 2017. First this week, the sudden and tragic collapse of a jetty on a riverfront in India, bustling with commuters. Local hams rushed to the scene to assist with the rescue efforts.
Hams in West Bengal responded to a dramatic rescue effort on a riverfront outside Kolkata in India after an aging wooden jetty collapsed, sending at least four people to their death and injuring more than a dozen. The jetty on the Hooghly River, about 22 miles north of Kolkata, on the 26th of April was in a state of disrepair at the time of its collapse and was crowded with more than 150 commuters, including school children. The commuters were waiting for boats to ferry them to jetties on the opposite bank. As local fishermen took their boats out to pull victims from the water, others dived in, and members of the West Bengal Radio Club arrived on the scene with their 2-meter handheld transceivers and, using Echolink, contacted the club station VU2MQT, 15 kilometres away, to assist in the rescue effort. Rinku Nagbiswas, VU2JFB, at the club station was able to relay information. The Echolink station used the KM6 EOM repeater of the Wanderers Amateur Radio Club in Los Angeles, California, after contacting its custodian Greg, KI6GIG. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Bucci for NJH.
The K2BSA call sign is going camping again this week and will also be part of a net.
This week in Radio Scouting, we have one activation from Scout Camps on the Air, a Scouter's Net, and more. Ray Zeck, N6DZK, will be the control operator for K2BSA Portable 6 at the Scoutorama for the Silicon Valley Monterey Bay Council at Historic Park in San Jose, California, on Saturday, May 13th. Ray will have a 100-foot tower with a Yaesu FT-991 into a hex beam. They will be on the air from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Pacific on 40, 20, or 15 meters, depending on band condition. The Radio Scouting Net will be on Thursday, May 11th at 9 p.m. Central on Echolink node star JOTA-365 star. If you are interested in talking with some veterans of radio scouting, this is a great opportunity to have an informal discussion during the net. Hamvention is approaching rapidly, and the K2BSA group will be present in Building 2 in Booth 2205. Please consider a visit to the booth to learn more about what you can do to get involved in radio scouting, like getting scouts to your field day event, and learn about our upcoming events like National Jamboree and Jamboree on the Air. For more information on K2BSA and radio scouting, please visit www.k2bsa.net. For Amateur Radio Newsline and the K2BSA Amateur Radio Association, this is Bill Stearns, NE4RD.
If you're traveling to Hamvention, a worthy side trip is the National Voice of America Museum of Broadcasting, located at the site of VOA's Bethany Relay Station in Westchester Township.
Although the Bethany Relay Station stopped operating in 1994 and its towers have long since come down, its doors will be open to amateurs who will want to experience its rich history in global radio. The museum's executive director, Jack Dominick, said that there's plenty to see and do.
If you think about it, it's kind of a must-see for someone who hasn't been here before, because if you're interested in ham radio, you're interested in shortwave, and this facility is arguably the most significant shortwave presence in the whole United States. At one time, six of the world's highest power shortwave transmitters were located.
Take a tour and see one of the transmitters, a 1960 vintage Collins rig. Visit the control room and see the antenna switching matrix that once allowed transmissions to be aimed directly at Europe, North Africa, and South America. The museum also contains equipment from Robert L. Drake's personal amateur radio collection. Admission is $5, and the doors are open May 19 and May 20th until 9 p.m. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mike Askins, KE5-CXP.
We're in the final weeks in the nominating period of the 2017 Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Young Ham of the Year Award. Nominations close May 31st. You can find the nominating form on our website, arnewsline.org, under the YHOTY tab. We'll present the award at the Huntsville, Alabama Ham Fest in August. For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, Bill Stearns, NE4RD, Mike Askins, KE5CXP, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
All right. Good stuff, as always, from the news this week. Dr. Tamitha Scove is getting ready for her trip to Dayton. So she did not have time to prepare a video for us. But she gave us some images that shows us what the solar forecast is. And there we go. See the solar flare and particle radiation storm 5-day outlook. She says the sun is pretty sleepy this week. No solar storms in sight. It's good news for GPS and hams, as the band conditions should be quiet as far as disturbances go. However, she says the sun is a little bit too quiet. Next one, Brian. There aren't any active regions in Earth view, so the solar flux levels are very low. She says we're hitting the bottom of marginal. As far as radio propagation goes, these low flux levels will remain easily through Mother's Day and into next week before they get better. And, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Tamitha Scove, and that is her Twitter feed right there. It's always there, always updated, sometimes to the second of stuff that's happening. She's right on top. I've seen her tweet at 3 or 4 in the morning, and she's been on there all night tweeting about stuff. So definitely something to check out. We had another Radio Shack receipt email to us this week, and so let's pull that up. It's pretty good stuff. You know, with Radio Shack going out of going out of business, some people have been taking advantage of some seriously discounted goods. Our friend Kevin, W4KEV up in Knoxville, found a 90% off sale. And it was buy one, get one free, which basically amounts to 95% off. They were essentially giving it to him. This is Scott, KB6LCW in Pahrump, Nevada.
no idea how long that receipt is, but it's double digits. It's probably 20 feet, I would say. It might even rival Kevin's at 26, but that's a good size Radio Shack receipt. So as my son Tyler says, with the closing of Radio Shack, it appears to be the end of an era. And Radio Shack was pretty big in my childhood. I'm going to miss it. Of course, you know, back in the 70s, it was the go-to place there in a little town in Oklahoma where I grew up. If you went in there and you had questions, they had answers. They didn't just have cell phones. They had answers. So there you go. Another man with a bunch of answers is our very own Bob Heil. And he has answers to lots of questions that he's been generating with this pine board project. So let's just jump right into it and get our feet wet. Bob?
Thanks, Don. Yep. It's exploded. It's unbelievable. And I thank everybody for getting on board. There's so much more to do. Before I get into that, I just want to let you know, if you're going to Xenia, Dayton, there's a lot of things going on that you need to take advantage of. I know that ICOM has some very special things going, contests. George will maybe cover it just a little bit too, but be sure you go by the ICOM booth. They've got a whole theme about Japan. It's pretty cool. And I bet you're going to see a new transceiver there. George will talk about that. I'm here in the plant this week because Sarah and Steve and Jerry, Donna, all of them, they've got some specials for us, too, that we'll be offering. Stuff that blew me away. You know, this is a brand new microphone. Very few people have it because it hasn't been on the dealer's shelf long. But they came up with some insane prices, so you don't want to miss that. Of course, all the other things that we do. We're in Building 5. Building 5. You'll have to get used to that and find all of us again. But I wanted to let you know about the specials that everybody has. One of the things that I thought was very special and kind of dear to my heart was this. This came from Chip and the chat room, and it was an award they gave me for encouraging the do-it-yourself equipment construction of the pine board. Thanks a lot, everybody. And then, you know, you remember this guy? Check this out. Mike did this. VE3MIC, look at that. Wait a minute. Oh, that's not the artist, Bob. That I think that's Don. I didn't know you painted, that's, Don.
That's my evil twin, Lon. Lon is multi-talented.
Well, we are ripping out of here, of course, to do the pine board project. Now, again, I have to warn everybody, we're dealing with high voltage. So just be a little careful and make sure that you do everything proper. I want to do a quick review of the power supply. I have gotten so many, I got some phone calls. I've talked to them on the air. And, of course, emails are just outrageous, a number of them. But a lot of people have built things and got it all going, and that's good. But we want to review a couple of things. This is the parts list. If you haven't gotten that all going yet, why, there you are. That's the parts list for the power supply. And you can do a screenshot or copy it down here. I would do a screenshot and do a replay. And that is the proper top power supply. You remember when we started originally, I only had one filter. And as you learned from George, and if you missed this, not only for the project here, but just all in general, you need to go back a couple of weeks and check that out. It is amazing what George did to teach you what these things do right here. And you have them in every radio, every power supply. And that filters it. Well, I didn't know what the load was going to be. I told you that in the beginning, but we ended up doing one more step, which really made things a lot cleaner, and it's beautiful. I can't believe how good it really does work. The power supply is wonderful. But there's the diagram laid out for you. This is the way that it will be laid out on the pine board. That's why we do pine board, because when you look down on your pine board, that's what you're going to see. So there you are. And look at Gene. Oh, boy. Gene is the guy that's doing all these wonderful graphics. Oh, man. Thank you so much, Gene. And that's his power supply. And that was done before, before I had room for it. It was there. Now his power supply has the third filter in it. So now we're going to head off and we're going to work on the preamp. The first thing you want to do is find a piece of pine board, plywood. I was really lucky. This is 11 ply finished plywood that was just kicking around. It was part of a shipment that came in that Sarah had bought a chest, and they packed it on there. And then what I do with that, this is a stuff called Watco. It's Danish oil. I took a paper towel, dabbed a little on it, and that gave me a nice finish. You don't have to do that, but it was just kind of nice to do that. So here we go with the power with the preamp. We've got the power supply under under tow, and there is the preamp. And all of the parts and stuff for it, we'll show you that here in a minute. This is all correct. It really works great. Don't have time to go through it tonight, but we'll do it in weeks to come. But we want to get you building a little bit. And here are the parts for the preamp. So check this out. Do a screenshot. There they are. That's all the parts. And what we're doing next is we're making a complete list of all the parts for the entire project and where you can buy them. And most everything is available from Antique Electronic Supply. Oh, man, they got everything. And guys will say, well, you can't get those old parts. Oh, yes, you can. So don't give up on that part. It's easy to get parts today. And we'll give you a list here in just a second. Here's how I started the preamp. First of all, you need a ground path system. And there's the ground path system. And what we're talking about there, this happens to be number 14 copper wire. I pulled it out of the middle of a piece of Romex. And there are all the strips available, solder strips available from Antique Radio Supply. And when you get that all finished, then you put things together such as this. This is what I did to my, and this really works great. This is the tube socket in the bottom of it. And I went ahead and I put all the wires that I needed, and all of the capacitors, resistors, so on. These are the things that do actually connect to the tube. I went ahead and did them. There's a lead that's going to go to the potentiometer volume control. This is a straight piece of wire that's going to go to ground. This is to the input. And when you follow the schematic, you'll see all of these. You'll see I've got a couple blocked out because we made it a couple of changes. And this is the final of it. And then you build it. And this is the first part of building that. Let's go back here so you can see this again so you understand. There's the layout of the ground path. And there it is. And that way you can see how it's all put together. And here's the final. This is a working preamp. And boy, does it work good. I am amazed. I had it going today here, and some of the guys in the shop, we're talking about guys that have never played with tubes, and they were amazed. The quality of that was just a few parts. Really works great. And thanks to all of you that sent me purple chicken head knobs. I thought that was just the coolest. I got a bunch of them now. But, it's just so much fun. But I went through this pretty fast for you, but it's all there. You can go back and do screenshots and replay. But the main thing about the preamplifier is to get started with the board and do your ground path. Here again are all of the parts for the preamplifier. We're going to use this preamp for a lot of things. I got a couple of things. We're going to build a PA amplifier, and I've got an intercom plan. There's all kinds of stuff that we can do once you have a preamp going. So that's pretty much where we are. And I have to tell you, in closing, there's a wonderful thing that happened. And thanks to Gene, W4IQN, he has done some great, great things with all these graphics, and all of them are now on our site. Just go to HighOfSound.com and to the ham radio site, all the way to the bottom of the page. You'll find all of the diagrams and really nice ones. You'll find all the parts list. And thank you, Brian. I owe you for this one. Brian went out and it took all just the pieces for the past six shows or whatever. And you can see just the little 10-minute segments and do the whole thing. And it's all done for you. You don't have to page through all of the other parts of the show. It's just the Pine Board. HighOfSound.com down at the bottom. So let me know. Send me pictures. I want to hear from you. And also, don't forget, we're dealing with high power. So K9MIT gave us the idea, and along with that was KA7TPH. You got to have your chipstick. And if you miss that, well, you'll see it in one of the replays. But connect that little baby to ground, and when you turn the power supply off, short it to ground. You really don't have to do that now, because when we get it all hooked up, we've got the final and the preamp. That'll draw some current, and with the filtering the way I have it, it pretty much bleeds it off in about 3 or 4 seconds. So that's pretty much it, what we have here. I'm so happy that we were able to bring you this tonight because of stupid weather. And in closing, here are the parts. Again, please remember that you can get all of these parts from these guys. There's the list. But the top of the list is Antique Electronic Supply. Vacuumtubes.com. I know they carry some tubes, but you're going to find the best deal, and that's where I get all my tubes. Vacuumtubes.com. All of the parts come from Antique Electronic Supply, and crystals come from Mr. Carling, AF4K. And Radio Days has parts, Gateway Electronics, so there you are. And all of this is on our site now. We'll have it all on there, the Tonight Show in a couple of days. Thanks, Brian. So thanks to everybody. And, in the chat room, somebody said, this is a PR30. It's the same microphone that George has, only George's is silver champagne. This was just an old funky black one. 7-3, everybody. For right now, we're going to go down and we're going to see what's going on at DX Engineering. And I think Don's going to tell us all about that.
But first, I want to wish you and Sarah a happy anniversary. Yesterday, I saw on Facebook, was your 19th wedding anniversary. So happy anniversary to Bob and Sarah Heil. Look at that. The youngsters in love. Oh, it just does my heart good. My cold, cold heart is just warmed all the way to the very bottom cockle.
Well, it's nice to be married to the boss.
Yes, exactly. That's true. That's job security right there, my friend. That's job. See, you got kidneys. You got kidneys. You know what DX Engineering has? DX Engineering has this hat and a whole lot more. And I want to tell you about it right now because they've got something really kind of cool. If you're going to Hamvention, you got to stop by the DX Engineering booth because that's the place. It's located in building one of the fairgrounds because, of course, everything's all new this year. Right near the hall's main entrance, their technical staff can help you solve any issues with your station, show you the newest innovations, and they have a bunch of exclusive show specials. And if you see someone walking through the show wearing DX Engineering credentials, don't hesitate to stop them and chat. So there you go. And also, they have the DX Engineering Hamvention Survival Packages available right now on the website. You can be stylish, comfortable, and prepared because you never know what's going to happen when it comes to Hamvention weather. Sometimes you melt, sometimes you freeze, sometimes you drown. But it's very rarely just right. And DX Engineering has some of their gear all put together in one pack to help you survive the weekend. Rain or shine packages are the survival tool to let you get around the new venue without too much suffering from the weather. Keep the sun from your eyes with this very hat that I'm wearing, the handsome DX Engineering hat. Keep the rain and sun at bay with the umbrella. Provide portable shade, also keeping you and your radio nice and dry. Stay stylish in the heat with a DX Engineering dual logo T-shirt.
That's a cool, comfortable cotton T-shirt. And also, they have the DX Engineering pen so you can take notes, sign credit slips, and you know you're going to be doing that. Take tests, pass your contact info along to other hams with a DX Engineering ballpoint pen. Go look at the survival packages. Best thing about them is it's a solid link to amateur radio by supporting the DX Engineering logo. You don't want to go to Hamvention without one, do you? Order your DX Engineering Hamvention Survival Pack now. Show your ham radio involvement, support, and good taste. And it's all right there on the DX Engineering website. Plenty of activity in that aforementioned DXE booth, including a demo of the popular Transworld antennas. They'll show you just how easy it is to get one set up and on the air in 5 minutes, literally. If you can't attend, DX Engineering has a video of the 5-minute install in the product video section of DXEngineering.com. The Transworld antenna packages are perfect if you have limited space and limited budget for your HF antenna setup. And even if you're an avid portable HF operator, they're perfect for that. You can find the DX Engineering team members all over the fairgrounds all through the weekend, and they know pretty much everything. They know the answers to your questions before you've even thought of them. Check out the schedule posted under Tech Info and News at DXEngineering.com. It'll tell you exactly what events DX Engineering is involved with, and they are many and varied. The DX Engineering staff will be at Contest Super Suite every night. They will also attend Contest University. And if you're going to 4 days in May, DX Engineering will be there too. Basically, there's going to be a small army of DX Engineering staff members enjoying the show. So if you see somebody wearing DXE credentials, they'd love to talk with you about your station. They'll be showcasing some new and exciting gear for 2017 too. And even though most of the DX Engineering team will be at the show, the order and tech support lines will still be open. You can always order at dxengineering.com and via the phone. The tech staff is working at reduced capacity, so exercise a little patience if you do call. But your issue will be taken care of and taken care of well. You know, DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. If you get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern and if it's in stock, they'll put it on a truck and it'll be headed your way tonight. Proven products, expert advice. DX Engineering helping you shrink the globe. Request a catalog or shop online 24/7. At dxengineering.com. We thank them so much for their support of Ham Nation. They're a great folks to work with. Just love those guys. Love this guy too, George. George was smoking solder. What are you burning tonight? What are you burning tonight?
Well, I'm not going to burn this, but
no, that's nice.
DX Engineering has a nice silk screen T-shirt too, logoed on both sides. I'm going to tell you in just a minute.
That's the one. That's the one in the pack. That's the one in the pack right there. That's
okay.
The actual
article. I'll tell you how someone can win one. Not you, Don. You've already got one. But
I'm just fine. I got my hat.
Yeah, you do. I've got the hat too, but I can't reach it from here. Well, you know, Bob mentioned the power supply that we talked about. 2 weeks ago, we talked about the power supply. We showed how it worked, the difference between a half wave and full wave rectifiers. And this past week, we talked about the filtering on that power supply, the Pi filters that were on there to filter out that ripple. There's just a couple of things I wanted to add to those topics. First, we were talking about the diodes. A single diode, as we showed you, that would be called a half-wave rectifier because that's only taking advantage of the top half of the AC sine wave. When we had the two diodes in there, then we had a full-wave rectifier. It took care or actually used both halves of the sine wave. It would take positive from either side of our transformer there and send it on out positive lead. Of course, that had a transformer that is center tapped here. And I noticed some questions in the chat room. Don't you use a bridge rectifier? Or isn't a bridge rectifier full wave? Well, yes, it is. But if you've got a center tapped transformer like this, you don't need a bridge rectifier. All you need is two diodes here to have full wave rectification. Now, what if you took out, say, that center tap on the ground? Well, you can't do it with just two diodes, can you? Because where's the negative going to come from? You can't tie ground either one of these because That's where your positive is coming from. So in that case, that's when we use a four-wave bridge rectifier. It's four diodes instead of two. And you can see here the AC comes in the top and bottom corners of the bridge rectifier here. Positives, well, you know, whichever side of the transformer is positive is coming out this terminal here, one way or the other. And the negatives, of course, are tied to ground here, and you'll get your negative there. So that's how you can do it. If you've got a transformer with a center tap, all you need is two diodes. But if you've got a transformer without a center tap, you've got to get your ground in some way, or your negatives, and that's how you do it. Full wave bridge rectifier. Also, one other thing I wanted to mention, you know, we looked at the filter capacitor first. I had a 1,000 microfarad filter capacitor we were using last week, and comparing that with what we could do with the Pi filter sections there. And another thing to mention, you know, when you're just dealing with, say, a half-wave rectifier, you know, just the top halves of the sine wave there, you're operating at 60 cycles. The lower you go in frequency, the larger the capacitor needs to be to adequately filter out the ripple on it. So when you go to a power supply that's center tap like this, and, you know, we're using both halves of the waveform, so our ripple frequency is going to be 120 hertz, doesn't take quite as big a capacitor because the frequency is a little higher. So that's another advantage to a full wave rectifier. One other thing I wanted to mention, I don't know if Bob is still with us right now or not. He may have already dropped out for the evening so we could bring in others. But we got an email this week from Alan Litton, K5ABL. He was watching when we were talking about those carbon resistors, and Bob had one last week. We talked about this on and off for several weeks. He had one that had five different bands on it, and the last band was yellow. And, you know, we were trying to decide what that yellow band actually was. Well, you know, I saw somewhere that it could be temperature coefficient, but I didn't think that's what it was. And turns out, no, that's not what it was. I had no idea. But Alan says that carbon composition resistors are made or were made by two series by the manufacturers like Allen Bradley, TRWIRC. He said those included the RC series for commercial use, just a standard four color bands on it, and the RCR series for military use. And those are the ones with the five stripes. And he said the ones that had the yellow stripe as the last of five stripes there, that indicates that that was a military high reliability resistor. So, Bob, you have a highly reliable resistor there. I would hang on to that one. Thanks for that explanation, Alan. We appreciate that. And, you know, last week I asked a little question to do with the power supplies that we had been talking about. I asked you, in the United Kingdom, what would be the ripple frequency of a full-wave bridge rectifier? Well, you know, I didn't actually draw a name on that, so I'm going to have to do that here in just a minute and see who got it right. But the answer is 100 hertz. You know, the power frequency in the United Kingdom and some other countries in the world is 50 hertz instead of 60 like it is here in the U.S. So when you've got a full-wave rectifier, it's going to be double your line frequency, so that's going to make it 100 hertz. And I'll do a drawing just in a moment here, and we're going to find out who wins this MFJ 2703 three-way wideband antenna switch, heavy-duty switch here, good to up to, oh, I think 2 kW. on the HF bands and, you know, high ratings on VHF and UHF. It even goes up into the gigahertz range, a very heavy switch. Nice, rugged. I use these here in the shack. Thanks, MFJ, for that. We're going to give that away to someone who knew that the ripple frequency of a full wave bridge is 100 hertz in the UK. And I've got another question. This is going to be for next week, and it's going to be a little bit harder here. We're going to step it up. We're going to Gordo's Extra Class Amateur Radio Study Guide, and we're pulling a question out of here. When scheduling EME contacts, which of these conditions will generally result in the least path loss? Is it when the moon is in perigee, or when the moon is full, when the moon is at apogee, or when the muff is above 30 megahertz? Well, if you think you know the answer to that, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And we're going to do a drawing for, well, I just happen to have this DX Engineering silkscreen t-shirt we were talking about. So if you want to win that, then tell me which of those conditions is best for EME. You probably need to know what EME stands for, but you should be able to figure that out. HamNationContest@gmail.com. Well, there's a couple of things I want to mention. You know, we're looking forward to Hamvention and seeing the folks at DX Engineering, along with a lot of other people that we've come to enjoy meeting every year at Hamvention. One of those is our friend Simon, ZL2FAE, who just happens to be spending the night in my area tonight. I'm going to catch up with them in the morning, and we're going to visit for a moment, and I'm going to send him on north, and he's going to go see Bob in St. Louis. But we'll catch up with him again at Dayton Hamvention. It's a new year at Dayton. You know, there's a new location, more buildings. It's supposed to be a fantastic event this year. Looking forward to it and seeing all the changes there. And there's some new stuff from ICOM here. I just wanted to mention, if you're going to be at Hamvention, you want to check out these. It's the IC7300. You know, that was released, and we looked at that last year. Super nice software-defined radio that has really been gaining a lot of praise. Well, they're adding a couple more SDRs in the lineup there. It's going to be the IC7610. That'll be making an appearance at Dayton Hamvention this year, so you want to stop by and see that 7610. If it's anything at all like the 7300, I think it's going to knock it out of the ballpark too. There's also a new software-defined receiver. It's a wideband, extremely wideband, handles a lot of different modes, more than just, you know, our sideband AM and FM. It handles several digital modes as well. That's the R8600 will be on display there. You'll want to check that out. Of course, the new ID4100A D-Star mobile rig, that's going to be on display. And there's one other wideband receiver. It's the R30 handheld. That'll be there as well. And you, as Bob mentioned earlier, you know, they're doing a promotion on Japan. Well, it's not just, Japan and ham radio. It's some chances to win some great prizes. You need to go to the ICOM America website every week. Well, I'm not sure how much longer, if it goes through Hamvention or if the contest runs longer than that, but you want to go every week to the ICOMAmerica.com website and register for the Hams to Japan contest that they're having there, because they're going to be giving away some new radios. But not only that, you know, we talk about Dayton Hamvention being the largest, or surely one of the largest Hamfest in the world. Well, there's another one that belongs on the same list there with Hamvention, and that's the Tokyo Ham Fair, where you really get to see the big manufacturers releasing the new radios that everybody's looking for. ICOM's going to be giving away a free trip to some lucky ham to the 2017 Tokyo Ham Fair. So drop by their booth in Dayton. Also, like I said, every week, go to ICOMAmerica.com and register. You'll find a link there for the Hams to Japan contest. It's free, and who knows, you could win a great radio or a very memorable trip to the Tokyo Ham Fair. So right now, let's get a message from ICOM, and then we're going to come back and tell you what prizes we're giving away from them this time.
Adventures await. A new radio, giveaways, and a trip to Japan. May is full of excitement at ICOM. You don't want to miss out. A compact and smart design, the ID4100A is the perfect D-Star companion for all the journeys ahead. Its intuitive interface, variety of operating modes, and Bluetooth capability make this the perfect D-Star option for adventure seekers. Integrated GPS receiver, new dot matrix display for enhanced DR mode and GPS information, terminal mode and access point mode, applications for iOS and Android devices, and a micro SD card slot for voice and data storage.
Calling all hams.
Enter the ICOM America Hams to Japan sweepstakes today for a chance to win an ICOM radio or even an unforgettable experience to attend the 2017 Tokyo Ham Fair. Make sure you come back and enter each week to be eligible for each radio drawing.
You don't want to miss out on this sweepstakes.
Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM radios.
You can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation, register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And while you're there, you can also learn how you could win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And we've got a new radio we just mentioned, the ID4100A VHF UHF entry-level D-Star mobile with Big Rig features, analog and D-Star, built-in GPS receiver, DV and FM repeater near-me functions, micro SD card slot available for voice and data storage, and you can download a free Android or iOS app. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/amateur after this and each episode of Ham Nation. That's ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. Register to win. Sign up. Good luck. And don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, I said I was going to do a drawing here real quick and find out who knew the ripple frequency in the UK for a full-wave bridge rectifier. It looks like a lot of people got that one wrong. They were saying it's 50 hertz in the UK. Well, that's what the power line frequency is. But the ripple frequency of 120 hertz, or excuse me, of a full wave rectifier in the UK is going to be 100 hertz. And it looks like Brian Hemming, KA3CTP, is the first one here to get that right. So congratulations, Brian. We're going to send you the MFJ heavy-duty antenna switch that I was mentioning just a moment ago. All right, that does it for me. I believe Val is with us here for my report on the wide, wide world of DX. Hi, Val.
Hi. I'll start off with DX for now. Right now, Victor Uniform 4 Yankee Charlie is on Andaman Islands, pretty rare ones, so you want to get out there and work them. Also coming up this weekend, the military government call sign, November Sierra Sierra. Well, that's going to be on air for the first time in about 40 years. And that's going to be on for Armed Forces Day cross-band military amateur radio communication test. That's a lot of syllables. They're going to be operating from the historic Naval Radio Station in Greenbury Point, Annapolis. So you might want to get on the air and work those guys. Also, the Arkansas CUSO party is this weekend, so some stuff going on. And then, of course, we got Dayton next week. But, you know, summer's right around the corner, so I thought it would be a good time for us to talk about VHF. So here's a video on VHF. Hello, everybody. NV9L here. I'm joined here with Bob Striegel, K2DRH.
Hi.
And Bob is actually a really big-time VHFer. And so that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. He's been licensed for some 40-odd years, or were they even years?
Well, actually, like I said, I got my novice license in 1964, but then I was a teenager, and I discovered girls and cars and other things, so I let my novice license lapse, and then 1977, I got my license back again when I got into the RF microwave business after college.
Now, Bob's won several awards in VHF contests, including you're the current record holder for
TQ Worldwide VHF, which occurs every July, and also the record holder for the June ARRL VHF contest.
And for those of the people out there that aren't familiar with VHF, what bands does VHF include?
Well, basically anything above 10 meters. 6 meters being one of the primary bands and one of the great bands now that a lot of the manufacturers are including 6 meters in the, you know, natively in the radios. But then it goes to 2 meters, 222, 432, 902, 1296, 2304, 2 gig in other words, 3456, 5760, which is and also an ISM band with a lot of interference, unfortunately. And then they
What's
go to
ISM?
A lot of industrial type stuff.
Okay.
Industrial machinery, industrial.
Farm equipment, is that on there?
I don't think so, okay. No. 2304 has a lot of Wi-Fi on it, too.
Okay.
It's actually right in the middle of some of the Wi-Fi bands. And then 10 gigahertz, of course, and then 24, 48, but not a lot of guys get that high. That's pretty technical. Even during contests, there are rovers that will set up lasers and work up into the terahertz, and that's a legal band also. So there's a lot
that's
of different bands.
That's a lot
bands
of bands to play with in a contest.
It can be, pretty
now,
much.
There's a lot of new hands out there watching us now, so if they want to get into trying out VHF, I mean, you only need to be a tech, and you can compete in all of these bands, right?
Absolutely.
So it's perfect for all you new hams out there that want to try it out, and you really don't need a lot of equipment to start off. I mean, just your 2-meter radio, get it, especially if it's in your car, right? You can kind of rove around and go to a pie somewhere. And
well, you know, they have a bunch of different classes, of course, multi-op, just like anything. They have the single ops that go from home stations and or... like K1TR will do it. He'll set up his station on top of a mountain type of thing.
Okay.
And they have a portable class, a portable QRP class that you can go out and set up anywhere you want. But they have one of the unique things, like they have with some of the QSO parties, is they have a rover class where guys will mount all their antennas on a car, maybe a separate 6-meter antenna on a mast or something like that. And they'll go out into the field and activate a whole bunch of different grid squares, you know, either in populated areas or non-populated areas, and have a really good time with that. The rovers seem to...
And that roving category, they have what, a 4-band category for that? Or
well,
the
they
top?
Have two... Yeah, they have 3 different categories, actually. They have a limited rover class where you just take the bottom 4 bands, 6-2, 222, and 432, which is a great entry-level class. And then they have a what I call a classic rover, where you're allowed every band on up to light.
Which looks to be about 14 or 15 bands,
well,
right?
There's actually more, but nobody gets
on
them.
Okay.
I mean, there's 100 gigahertz, but nobody really has rigs for
that. That's
those.
A lot of hardware to put on a vehicle and rove around.
We have a lot of ham radio bands out there. But
And the goal in these contests is to get grid squares.
You're not going
by state like a lot of the HF contests. So a grid square, kind of explain that a little bit.
Well, basically, they cut up the world into 1x2 degree grid squares. And if any of you guys that have done JT65 or anything like that.
So it's 1 degree tall by 2 degrees wide.
I believe so, yes.
It looks like rectangles on the map.
Yes.
So, And there's how many grid squares in the U.S.?
Oh, my God.
Or the continental U.S.?
488, I believe.
Okay. And
there's an award for that called the Fred Fish Memorial Award. This guy back in New Mexico, Fred Fish, W5FF, decided he was going to work every grid square in the continental United States. Not Alaska or Hawaii, you know, but just the continental grids. And that turned out to be a rather daunting test because he had to send people out to various grid squares. There was nobody there. I mean, there's some pretty lonely grid squares, to say the least, especially, down by the Dry Tortugas and tip of Texas and Mexico out in the Badlands. And even on the California coast, there's one that's just like almost impossible to get to. There's like 10 feet of land in it or something.
Oh.
You know, it's
or even like Montana, Wyoming, some of the, or the Rocky Mountains. Probably,
yeah,
certain,
and those
terrain.
Those are difficult. There's actually one in on the East Coast that's basically down the end of a dock is a different grid square. You know.
Oh, okay. So, you have to get it on a certain band, or it can be like
all on 6 meters.
WDXCC, all on six meters. Okay. Now, as we're heading into our solar minimum, HF is. I mean, we just did a contest and it was brutal. Are the VHF bands affected by solar minimums as much as the HF bands?
The answer is yes and no. Basically, 6 meters is capable of F2, but only on a really high solar peak. Now, sporadic E, statistically, I've talked to guys with like K1SIX, Bob Mobile, who have done a lot of statistics and a lot of number crunching and whatnot. And he finds basically that there is no statistical correlation between the sunspot cycle and the
sporadic
E.
Well, I know I've been bugging Jerry because I want to go roving. If somebody out there wants to rove or maybe just start getting into VHFing, are there good websites or do you know of any good places they could go?
Well, the best place to learn about roving would be to go to Central States VHF.
Okay.
The Central States VHF contest or the East Coast conferences, the Southeast VHF conference.
And those are usually over the summer.
And
in the
also,
heart of VHF season.
Right. And the Northeast VHF conferences too.
Put a list up here of VHF contests so you guys can see that if you want to go and get into it and
hook
up with some mentors and maybe can help you get set up. Right?
Last year in D.C., three clubs got together and they did a combined super conference, and that was pretty amazing. They go to what they call Rover Road, where everybody sets up their rover to show off a little bit.
And then you can kind of get
good
ideas.
And then you can kind of talk to them, get ideas, swap lies.
And
you know,
I'm sure they're willing to talk to you because everybody loves to show off their equipment.
Yeah. No doubt about it.
It's a guy thing.
Well, the different rovers do different things. Like Andrea, K2EZ, is a run-and-gun rover who basically runs a bunch of loop antennas and runs while she's on the go. And she runs incredible distances. You know, she can run 1,700, 1,800 miles. And
how many grid squares is that?
Oh, my God. She did like 27 grids in one contest, I believe.
Wow.
She's just crazy. But and then other guys will mount antennas on their car, fixed on the car, and point them all in different directions.
So the big contests for VHFing are what? CQ Worldwide VHF, June VHF?
CQ Worldwide VHF and June VHF are the ones that are most likely to have sporadic E. There's a September VHF contest and January VHF contest. The January VHF contest is basically pretty much flat conditions.
And June VHF is coming up real soon. That's a second weekend in June every year, right?
Yeah, I think
so it's
the
a couple
10th,
weekends
10th
before
and 12th this year.
Field day. When is CQ Worldwide typically?
It's mid-July. Sometime.
So that one's coming up shortly as well. So thank you so much for teaching us all about VHF. Hopefully you guys can try a new aspect of the hobby, or those of you just getting started, this is a great place to start because you only need to be a tech.
Yeah, it's true, and it really is a lot of fun. You will, you will be able to get away with 100 watts and smaller antennas, but
and not a lot of fancy equipment, and it's a cheap way to kind of get into the.
Well, especially if you're on the East Coast, you know, where there's a lot of guys to work. If you're in the Midwest and going down towards California, you probably need a little bit more longer antennas and stuff. You know, because the distances between stations spans a little bit further.
All right, very good. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us, Bob. Appreciate you stopping by today.
Certainly.
And that's all I've got for this week, so I'm going to head it over to Amanda, providing she hasn't drowned yet.
We're still here, not exactly
right.
Here drowning, but a few places. Hey, Val, thank you so much for that, and heard you got some pretty bad weather going on too, right?
Absolutely. Well, it seems to have subsided a little, but I thought we were going to blow away waiting to get called for my segment. But yeah, very good. And thanks for what you're doing there, doing all that public service for all the flooding going on in your area. That's very cool to give up your precious time to do that. So
thank you. And you have a good night, and hi to Jerry as well.
Okay.
All right, you guys, before we bring on our guests here, I'm going to go over some announcements. First of all, I want to show off this cool shirt if I can get it high enough. This was a gift from Kevin out of New Zealand. It's a firefighter shirt. Thank you so much, Kevin. This is the coolest gift for Jeff and I. We got two shirts. So as you all know, fire service shirts, they have your emblem in the front, this in the back. Try to show it off here. I can't pronounce the name of this town. It's like Waka Katana or something like that. But Kevin, these are the coolest. Not only did he send us shirts, because him and Jeff are both firefighters, and they also are private firefighters. They both work at steel mills and do firefighting there. So it's pretty neat. And here's the hat that he sent. It's pretty neat, right? Sent us some badges or patches, I should say. And I'm probably not going to pronounce this right, but some epaulettes. So that's pretty nifty. Thank you so much, Kevin. And in return, we have some shirts and some patches to send you as well. A couple more announcements tonight. You guys, don't forget Dayton's coming up. So look for the Ham Nation booth, which is also going to share the Amateur Radio Newsline booth in building number 5 in Xenia. And let's see, I did have a couple more announcements here. Let's get to them. The Greater Midwest Radio Show is going to take place this weekend in Hastings, Nebraska. It's Saturday, May 13th from 8 a.m. until 1 p.m. And that's at the Adams County Fairgrounds. Next thing, you guys, look, there's a GoFundMe site now going on for some blind hams to help them get a DigiPan that works for them. I'd like to get into this more, but we don't have enough time. But if you want to donate to them, please go to GoFundMe and search for DigiHam for hams, blind hams, excuse me, and check that out and see if you can maybe donate a few bucks for them to help them get on the air with some DigiPan there. All right, Brian, do we have all of our guests on now?
Yeah, we have everybody on right now.
All right, let's I'm going to tell you guys who we have on here tonight. We have all of our digital net controls on tonight. So first I'd like to, Jeff, when I say your call sign, raise your hand and say hello. We have Jeff K8JTK. Hello. Dave N3NTV. Hey, Dave.
Hey.
And Andrew W8LIV.
Hey.
Hey, you guys, thanks so much for being here. So first I'm going to go kind of a round table here and I'll let you guys explain which net you run and how you got started with it. Jeff, you take it away.
Hi, thanks, Amanda. Well, I do the Ham Nation D-Star After Show net. We're on Reflector 14 Charlie. And way it kind of got started was a bit of an interesting story. A number of people have done the After Show net for D-Star. But one of the days, Ham Nation was running pretty late. Dave, who is one of my net controllers, he is KB9VZU. He was actually in Florida somewhere wanting to do the after show net from a club. But since the show was running so late, he pretty much had to bug out. And I kind of jumped in and said, well, I'll take it. And pretty much ran the net. That was about 3 or 4 years ago, 2014. So that's kind of how I got started and been helping him out ever since.
Well, you do an excellent job, you guys. And if any of you are looking to get on the D-Star net and are having problems, absolutely look up Jeff on QRZ. Send him an email because he is the most helpful guy ever. He knows all options of how to get on D-Star, and he knows a lot of the troubleshooting and how to help you through it. I think he'd probably even give you a phone call if you needed it. So, Dave in 3NTV, Dave, how'd you get started with Ham Nation net, and which net do you run?
Okay, very good. Well, I'm with the Dude Drop-In, no number 355-800. And the way I got started was 6.5 years ago, Paul, N9OFU, and Steve, W8WFO, asked me to run the Saturday Night Net. And then same time, they asked me to run the Dude the Ham Nation Net. So I've been doing it for just over six and a half years now, and it's been a lot of fun.
Very good. Well, thank you. Andrew, W8LIV. How'd you get into it? You're the newest net control with the DMR, so that's great. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a blast.
I'm actually good friends with Jeff, KJDK, and with him running the DStarNet, I made the suggestion, hey, why don't you start up a DMR net? We got a repeater here locally. And he just kind of laughed and said, hey, I'm busy running mine. Why don't you? So I reached out to, I reached out to the show hosts and they seemed really open. And here we are now.
There you go. Now, there's some differences in DMR because we have DMR here, but we do mostly all local DMR. So there are differences. I can't just join in and talk to you guys because I don't have the right DMR. That's correct. There's different kinds, right?
Definitely. So there's different C bridges that you have to connect to. And really, it's up to the repeater owners. One of the systems that I use and one of my CodeNet controllers use is Brandmeister, which is an open source version. And it's able to connect to all the different, basically, other C bridges. And it carries a lot of the talk groups.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So I'm having background conversation here. Jeff K0JSC talks to KHATK all the time, too. Jeff, did you want to come in and say hi to Jeff real quick? Like,
hello,
hi.
Guys.
KHATK jumps on our repeater system occasionally. All right, let's move on. So, Brian, whenever you want to start streaming those photos, you guys that got your photos of you, I thought that was wonderful. I just thought some people would like to see your shacks and you guys in operation. Jeff, my next question for all of you guys are going to be in part of the special event stations. We're all going to be celebrating Ham Nation 300 together, which it's coming so soon. I'm so excited. So, Jeff, you first, how are you going to be doing your special event call sign, and how are people going to be able to find you?
The digital stations here for Echolink, DMR, and DStar, we'll be using our own call signs in operating. And what we'll probably be doing is operating on our normal locations, 14 Charlie, 311, and do drop in, and probably, you know, an hour or two a night. But pretty much up to the net controllers how they want to do it. What we're going to have is a digital card for any of the net controllers that you work. We'll put you in a log, and then once everything's tabulated, we'll submit everything, and if anybody sends us cards, we'll send you a card in return. And I'll probably be trying to do some JT65 as well. I know Val said she might be doing some radio PSK, but I'll try to jump on the low bands HF and do some JT65 as well, in addition to doing some DStar.
That'll be fun. And Dave, what about you? Are you going to kind of come up with a schedule for the week of the special event stations, or how are you going to be announcing that?
It'll just be in here, you know, a couple hours a night during the week. It's I work the graveyard shift, so I got to really watch my time. So, yep, I'll be here in a dew drop in. Yep, there's my station, but I'll be at hopefully Wednesday nights and Thursday nights. Thursday night we're pretty busy with net, so we'll be find me here.
Very good. And of course, you know, when you guys are busy, if someone else will take over for you, that'd be cool too. You know, sometimes weather conditions can be a factor, and you can't always plug in your external antennas and stuff like that. So it could be a problem. Also, Andrew, you, any kind of scheduling you got going on? Or are you just going to get in on your free time?
I think the DMR team is pretty much just going to get on during our free time. The nice thing about DMR is we can bounce around the different talk groups. One of the other things that I talked to Jeff about was possibly getting on P25 a bit. I know that there's a handful of people out there that are preferring that mode for digital. So I can jump around some of the reflector systems over there as well.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I can't wait to listen for you guys and work you a few times in the week. And if I already work you, maybe I'll just jump in and say hello. So I really appreciate it. Now, are all of you guys going to Dayton?
Yes,
nope,
I am.
Nope.
Yeah, great. So people can get with you there too and say hello and drop by the Ham Nation booth and probably see you guys around.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll be around, and I think there's a form, so we'll be there as well.
That's right. So next week, you guys, is a special show. We're going to call it like show 299B. It's going to be the Live from Dayton show. So I hope you guys all tune in next week because it'll be a fun time seeing everybody from, I think they call it the Crown Plaza is where they're going to be doing the live show from. So everyone make sure you check that out. That's all I've got tonight, you guys. Thank you so much, the three of you, for joining us. It was really a special honor. And thank you so much for all the work you do for being in net control. It is not an easy job. HF, repeater, D-Star, DMR, it doesn't matter. When you get a plenty full of check-ins, it's work. So one last thing from each of you. Tell me where we can find you here in a few minutes. So you first, Jeff.
You can find myself and Dave and Alan, VKF5PBZ. We're on Reflector 14 Charlie. That's 14C as in Charlie. We also have a website where if you're not familiar with, Ham Nation, some of the check-ins have never heard of the show. We also offer a live stream there and have everything linked up. That website is hamnationdstar.net, and you can check that out. And we'll be taking your check-in on the net.
Perfect. Dave, where can we find you?
I'll be at Star, do drop in Star, or node number 355-800, and I'll be waiting for your check-ins after the show.
Awesome. Andrew?
And you can find DMR on TAC 311, Talk Group 311.
Very good. All right, your other nets, you guys, look on 7180 and 14268. With that, happy Mother's Day, everyone. I love my mother so much, and I can't wait to spend Sunday with her. So any of you ladies out there listening or watching, happy Mother's Day as well. All right, Brian, I think we're done. Great show.
Sounds good to me. We'll end it on that.
All right.
Good job, Amanda.